Welcome everyone to the Auckland Cricket Podcast. My name is Ian Lexon. Apologies that we've been away for so long, but let's move straight on in to talk about all the stuff that's been happening in the cricket world. And joining me here to do that, Neil Gray and PJ Veneman. Welcome, gents.
Good evening.
Hello.
In your own time. Well done. Okay, let's launch into what's probably the hot topic of the day, which is where all the cricket's happening at the moment, and it's not happening in too many other places. India v England, last test, which was the second in the series, and almost incidental was the fact that England won that, and won it convincingly in the end. But Ian Bell,
run out,
then called back after apparently an instigation by the coach. What's his name?
Andy Flower,
that's right, and Andrew Strauss, apparently, to Dhoni at the tea interval.
Dhoni and Fletcher.
As the coach, yes. Okay, right. I've read a lot on this, with varying viewpoints, varying from this is the most wonderful thing to happen and it's the spirit of cricket personified, isn't it fantastic, to this is ridiculous, Bell is a dozy idiot and he should get everything he deserves. Where do you guys stand?
I have three thoughts on it.
That's better than one.
From differing angles.
Okay, far away.
Well, one, Bell is a dozy idiot. Fairly simple. And the clever Irishman that was batting with him, when you watch the video, touched in, made sure he was in, and Bell didn't run past him, just in case it did all come out. So Morgan knew what was going on, so Bell's got no excuse for not knowing what was going on. Second point, Dhoni, I think the reports I've read was that it was actually driven by the team and not by Dhoni to change the decision.
Yeah.
So I think he's coming out of it with a lot of credit he's perhaps not due, and what
if credit is what you see is coming out of it.
Yes.
Yep.
In the spirit of cricket and all that guff, yeah, a lot of it was apparently driven by Tendulkar and Dravid, according to the reports. And then yeah, the third thought was, I think ultimately it for Bell taking his idiotic behaviour into account, it did overshadow what was a fantastic 100 in difficult circumstances as well.
Yeah,
batting at his first 100 at 3, chanceless apart from that until he got out, obviously, and probably won England that Test match as well in the end.
Okay, PJ, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I don't think that they should have brought Bell back. I understand why all the credit, all the alternative is all being aimed at Dhoni. I mean, he's a captain and it's his decision ultimately. But yeah, I think that Bell should have been out, and I think the worst thing about it is that there was coercion during the tea break for a coach and captain to approach the coach and captain of the opposition team and essentially blackmail them into recalling a batsman. I think it's just, I mean, it's got to be done on the field. Game's played on the field, not in the tea room.
It's been dressed up as this very gentlemanly thing, isn't it, that they'd sort of, and when it's almost like they've said that they went over to them and just said, you know, I say, old chap, maybe you might want to reconsider that if you'd be so kind. Whereas it's not. The guy's been legitimately run out and they've gone up and said, you know, hey, you want to change that, don't you? And basically gone against the laws of the game. I don't think there's any spirit of cricket in it whatsoever. It's interesting. People have brought up all sorts of stuff, including that 2008 incident with Grant Elliott when he got smacked over by Ryan Sidebottom, and the Englishmen were quite happy to run him out and then stand by the decision. And so he was dismissed, which, just to repeat, New Zealand actually went on to win that game. But it's a bit of a change of attitude, and Flowers maintaining they don't have double standards on the incident, but it's a wee bit.
But there was an incident after that where Strauss called someone back, can't remember when it was, when he took over as captain. There was a similar collision incident, and Strauss actually didn't uphold the appeal. So
yeah, I vaguely remember that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's, yeah, I don't think the coercion aspect of it in the tea room's necessarily in the spirit of the game.
I mean, that's the most interesting thing, that it was tea, so it puts this rule in where the decision can be overturned before the next ball's bowled. So it was like the whole of the tea break. But yeah, it creates a few issues, I think, that whole.
I mean, if you look at it from a New Zealand perspective, it's very, well, in many ways, it's very similar to that incident with Murley a few years back when McCullum dismissed him, wasn't he? When he was just wandering out of his crease, basically, and McCullum took the bails off, and we didn't decide to reinstate him.
Yeah, well, look, if you're ruthless and you want to win a game, Dhoni should have just said, look, the decision's been made and he's out. Sorry. And I don't think anyone would have held it against them, to be honest.
I just think it's unfair that they're put under that pressure to say that you need, you know, this is part of the spirit of the game, when, well, no, it's not. This guy was an idiot and should have been watching what he was doing and suffer the consequences.
And there was apparently an incident, I didn't see it, but apparently there was an incident in India with PBA's Laxman, in the West Indies for India, when Laxman was given out in controversial circumstances. I think it was stumped, I'm not sure though. And India were, that was their whole media line, was that they were real dark on that, so they could see where England were coming from. And if it had been, that was the other thing today, someone came out and said, if it had happened in Mumbai and it had been Sachin Tendulkar, it would have been an international incident.
That was Flair again.
Yeah, that's taking a bit of a leap.
It's a long bow,
yeah.
Isn't it, to draw? Yeah,
they've
very
got
long
two
bow.
Umpires on the field. They've got a match umpire up in the box, and you know that they've got DRS now.
They don't. Perhaps that's another topic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the decisions should be made by those people. I don't think umpiring decisions should be made in the tea room by coaches and captains.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different case when, you know, a captain can go over and ask a player, "Did you catch that ball?" And then call somebody back, and that the umpire couldn't see. But when it's clearly out. There's no, you know, question that it's not.
Yeah. To be honest, if they let him go, let the decision stand, it probably would have made an otherwise, in my opinion, fairly boring test series a little bit interesting.
Controversy, that's what we want. Okay, well, I think everybody's heard probably more than enough about that, so we'll leave that to die. But on to more interesting and topics that we like to talk about, the death of Australian cricket, such as it is. Now, I'd say that in jest, but if you read any websites and other media that's going around, you might be fooled for thinking that that's what a lot of commentators and people who talk about the game of cricket in Australia are saying. There's predictions that they've taken totally the wrong team to Sri Lanka. They've picked another new young spinner, Nathan Lyon, is it?
Yeah.
Who nobody seems to have heard of, basically. There's the Kadich incident from, you know, a few weeks ago. They didn't get a contract. There's still much conjecture about whether Clark should be the captain. There's dearth of apparently quality fast bowlers coming through. They're still worried about their batting lineup. I mean, is it really as doom and gloom as it might sound, or is it just the fact that they've been used to being the dominant force in world cricket and they're now just coming back down to reality of it?
I think their selectors are having a bit of a nightmare. I mean, they gave so much encouragement and backing to Steve Smith as being an all-rounder that was going to be around for a while, and then suddenly non-selection for him, and he's told to go and work on his game. I mean, if they're blooding these wee grommet spinners that nobody's ever heard of, why not actually stick with a guy for a while? Like New Zealand has had to do for years. I mean, we've had to put a player in who perhaps wasn't ready, and we've stuck by them. Southie, for example, I mean, they just seem to be having some knee-jerk reactions when it comes to selections and no consistency. And, yeah, I mean, I've lost count of how many spinners I've had. It's ridiculous.
I mean,
stick with someone.
Yeah, I think a lot of the issues come back to the selectors and the decisions they've made. And they offered the national contracts, and then they offered two national contracts to spinners, and then they've taken one that they didn't even offer contract to, which is going to bring them heat, whatever happens. And it just seems like a bit of a kind of leaderless mob at the minute. And underneath it all, there's still this Argus review that was going to happen after the Ashes that hasn't been revealed yet. And I mean, it's taken its sweet time, to be honest.
Yeah,
still looming there in the background.
It's interesting times for Australian cricket. It'd be an interesting time to be an Australian spinner at the moment, actually. Job security would not be high on your...
Yeah, but at the same time, if you're a spin bowler for any team in the country, you could think that it could be your chance at any given moment.
True. You're always in with a shout, admittedly. And I guess they're also dealing with that controversy of, well, the fact that they've got this KFC Big Bash with franchise teams, which is operating outside of the normal Sheffield Shield sides. There's much conjecture about the fact that they're taking money away from that four-day game, perhaps devaluing test match cricket by doing so and putting more money into the 2020, etc. It's all going on over there. And it's interesting, I guess,
and
because
it's going to happen slap bang before the test series starts against India. So all their best players are going to come
straight from 2020. Yeah, it's interesting. And that whole franchise model is interesting because, who knows, might be happening in a country near you in the not too distant future. So it's nice to be watching perhaps from this side of the Tasman as things implode and people shout and abuse each other. And it's nice to see the Aussies occasionally descend to that kind of stuff and not just stand around clapping themselves on the back. So I'm all for it. Right, speaking of being closer to home, domestic contracts, we're a couple of weeks out, but we need to catch up with that, especially about what happened with the Aces. If you have been buried in your winter hole hibernating or something, we'll just quickly run through the 11 guys who did get a contract. There's one left to go. They confirm that 12th one by the end of next week, I think it is. The guys who did get them are Michael Bates, Andrew DeBorder, Colin de Grandhomme, Gareth Hopkins, Annery Kitchen, Bruce Martin, Tim McIntosh, Colin Munro, Jeet Ravale, Bipinder Singh and Daryl Tuffy. So there's a few people that have missed out from previous year. That's in large part due to the fact that we've got three Black Caps who've come off New Zealand contracts and obviously they need to get an Aces contract. So any thoughts on those guys about who is in? Did they make the right decisions?
If you rate the team from 1 to 11 on the 11 they've named, it's a really strong team. So
hard to argue with then.
It's hard to argue with that being a good 11 team. Just it would be comings and going around format.
Mm.
Too many blowers, batsmen. But
I guess for
11 players, I think it makes sense. The ones that missed out, for anyone that's wondering, are Ronnie Heera, Jimmy Neesham, and the Shaw brothers, and Greg Todd.
Jimmy Neesham's a bit of a surprise to have missed out.
He's a hard man to fit in, though, I guess, isn't he? Having only played a handful of games last year, and he's undoubtedly a talent, but who do you drop in his place?
How does it actually work? If you've got a national contract, you don't get a club contract.
Yeah, it basically means that New Zealand cricket contract 20, I think it is, players, and that means that they're being paid by New Zealand cricket directly.
Right.
They're available for your province whenever they're not playing for the national side, but it means that you can then contract 12 players on top of those.
Right, makes sense.
Yeah, and the initial announcement is you can name up to 11 players. You can name as few as
nine,
I think.
Yeah.
And they then get to say yay or nay to those contracts, and then there's space to fill up the rest up to 12. And they're actually
having. Who do you reckon the 12th is going to be?
Well, that's a good question.
Facebook Massive have jumped on the Ronnie Heera bandwagon.
Yeah, well, it's. I mean,
he has carried the team on his shoulders for the last 2 years.
You've got to say he's the obvious name to pick on as the surprise admission. The others didn't see a lot of game time, so no, probably not as great a shock. But Ronnie was pretty much ever present throughout both One Day and 2020 last year, and performed well. So it's tough, but these have got two really good spinners to compete with as well. So you can kind of see in why they've made that decision. I don't know. Would you include a third spinner in out of 12? Contracted players, if you're going to name.
Well, you also have no. I think they have to pick either a fast bowler, but I don't think either Shaw. Well, one didn't play, and the other didn't exactly set the house on fire. I think if you look at the makeup of the team, they're probably a seam bowler short of the 12, or you could say they're a batsman short. So the ideal person probably that would tick both those boxes would be Neesham, a seam bowler. I don't know. Batting wise, there's Brad Cachopa who missed out on a contract that did well towards the end and also gives a reserve wicket keeping option. And then there's obviously in the media they've said Neil Parlane was released by Wellington and he's said he's going to come and play club cricket in Auckland. So whether they roll the dice on him.
It's not an easy task when you consider that there's also guys of the calibre of Greg Hay and Bevan Griggs also kicking around in Auckland club cricket. Not to mention a few other guys who've been putting up runs and stats.
Craig Cachopa,
exactly. Yeah, not an enviable job to be an Auckland selector and trying to actually fit all those guys into just 12 contracts. People are going to miss out, unfortunately. But anyway, we'll find out next week who the lucky 12th person is. And just on that note, it's interesting. I think that's the first time ever this year that I've heard somebody turn down a contract when Brad Scott said no to Otago after going to them and asking to come back. Which is interesting, but family reasons apparently, so fair enough in many respects.
The interesting thing, and it's an indictment of the system, is he's going to have turned down whatever his initial contract was from Northern Districts, which would have been a decent number. So they're ranked from 1 to 9, 1 to 11, however they offer the contracts. So he'd have been told whatever number he was, turned that down, gone to Otago, been given a number there, probably it's going to be 1 to 11, whatever it is, accepted that contract. Now rejected it, so the best he's going to get anywhere is the 12th valued contract.
But how's that a failing of the system? I mean, he's got to take some responsibility for going
but
to
I think what out. Should happen is that the contract should be offered, because the same thing happened to Auckland last year with
Myburgh,
yeah, who, and that would have a flow-on effect. And I think that the contract should be offered, accepted and rejected, and then announced by the associations rather than...
It's impossible, though. As soon as you tell people that they've been offered a contract, inevitably they're going to tell other people and say, keep it secret.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff leaks out. So why not actually announce it properly? And then if there is the occasional change, well, you know, you just deal with that as it goes along. I see what you're saying, but
yeah.
I think it's impossible to keep the lid on that kind of stuff. And so do you want to make it properly official through the right channels, or do you want it to just leak out and, you know, as it happens, I'd rather do the former myself. Right, that's enough on that. I have the last word. Excellent. And moving on to New Zealand cricket stuff. There hasn't been much practical stuff going on. They have been busy in dishing out the press releases, though, about naming the large number of support staff that are getting in place around the Black Caps. Most notable there is Damien Wright is the bowling coach. Chris Dolinson, a former 100-metre sprinter for New Zealand, is now their strength and conditioning coach. He's apparently done some work with both Otago and New Zealand emerging players previously, so has a bit of track record with them. Damien Wright's an interesting one, though. He was actually playing last year and played for the Firebirds in the HIV Cup for about the last half, I think, and was playing for the Victoria last season. So I'm not quite sure what his coaching credentials are, given that he is only just finished playing. But anyway, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on those appointments.
Just same as you, so a bit of surprise around Damien Wright.
Does it smack slightly, you think, of he's the only guy around that we could get? I mean, they wanted, obviously, Alan Donald. They also were talking about Andy Bickle, but he got something with, I think, Queensland cricket. Big Bash. There's somebody else mentioned it as well, I think, but he was overseas and...
I think going from Alan Donald to Damien Wright, like a proven great fast bowler who's worked well with the side, to going to someone who is just transitioning from being a player and, as you say, has little to no coaching credentials, I think it's a huge disappointment. But we'll see how it goes.
I mean, it might have been a case that he was the best of the applicants, and there aren't that many people around at the moment. But I guess these things sometimes go in cycles, don't they, in terms of who's actually available and who can apply for stuff. So who knows? It's an interesting change, though, from where we were, 2 months ago, when Alan Donald looked like he was all lined up and ready to go. And what else is happening in the international scene? There's actually stuff going on in Australia at the moment. New Zealand emerging players. They had a bit of a rough time early on. I think they lost their first three games over there, didn't they, in the shorter form stuff.
Two 2020s and a one day, I
think. Yeah, there's India, South Africa and...
The Australian
Institute of Sport. But they just about knocked over the Institute of Sport in a three-day game. Neil Broome scored a massive... He scored 197 out of 340. I didn't see the full scorecard, but doesn't say much about the rest.
Well, was the second highest score, I think.
Yeah, and he got 40, so if you take him into account, the rest of them manage about 80 between them. Yeah.
Doug Bracewell got a national contract, didn't he?
No,
he didn't. I think there's at least three people in this general pod who suggested that he should, but they decided he didn't. And BJ Watling, another contracted player, got a ton in the chase, which they fell only just short of, and they probably would have got, actually, if Bad Light hadn't stopped playing. So that's good. I think they've got one more game over there, maybe two.
So far, the
Auckland boys, Bruce Martin picked up a few wickets, I think, in the first inning. He's got three, maybe. I haven't heard much about Unruh Kitchen. I'm not even sure if actually he's made the lineup for this one. So what else is happening overseas, gents?
Well, I'm a little bit curious about the Zimbabwe-Bangladesh series, seeing Zimbabwe play a test match again. I know they're considered the toddlers of the test-playing nations, but I'm curious. It'll be a good contest, I think.
If they get towed by Bangladesh, yeah, it's pretty dire for them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah. No, it's got to be competitive. Hopefully it will be competitive.
And you see, Tatenda Taibu's been taking strips off the administration of Zimbabwe cricket prior to the start.
It's an interesting, because Bangladesh have got a lot of administrative issues as well, but new coach, Stuart Laws.
Well, I think they would have had a huge inquiry after their World Cup performances, wouldn't they? because they did win a couple of games, but they have some absolutely appalling efforts in that tournament when they were expecting big things as well, I think. Yep, and the Aussie series starts with a bunch of short form, couple of 2020s and about 3 1-days or something like that, I think, before they launch into the Test series, which will be really interesting. I think they could struggle over there, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, Mike Hussey was saying recently that he anticipates all of the pitches will spin massively, and the Sri Lankans will probably carry 3 spinners in their attack.
With probably an extra 1 or 2 part-timers or something as well, so...
As Australia throw the ball to anyone that can roll their fingers over the ball.
Michael Clarke might be throwing it to himself, perhaps.
I guess we should probably finish on the Champions League again.
We have, I was going to mention that probably next time we return, which will be in a couple of weeks, we might start getting into some full-on Champions League stuff about what's going on. There's not too much to update people on at the moment, although, if you've been hibernating for winter, we're now going through a qualifying tournament, the Aces, before they can actually make the main draw. That's the 16th to the 19th of September. They've got to take on Kolkata Knight Riders and one of the two English qualifiers from their competition who are yet to be determined.
So do we know who's unavailable for Auckland?
That's the beauty of it. Because of that English competition and that 2020 comp, the final is not until about the 28th or 29th of August. And speaking now, the three guys that we might have available are still in teams that are in those quarterfinals. So they're all still involved. And none of them are playing each other. So nobody's going to knock each other out in this round. It's just whether they win. So we might not know whether Andre and Jimmy Adams and Lou Vincent are available until pretty late on in the piece. Hence why we've named 22 players in the training squad. We're naming the 15-man squad that is the final squad in the middle of August. I think we might be negotiating with Champions League about if we don't know the availability of those guys, that we might be able to add another couple of names to the squad just as cover. But yeah, I think before that tournament starts, hopefully the week or soon before, we will do a full-on Champions League special, cover every single possible aspect that you could think of, including every team, who's there, what's it all about. Interesting news today that the major naming rights sponsor of the competition has just pulled out after 2 years of a 5-year deal. Hopefully that's an indication of anything else going awry with the tournament. Sure it's not. But yeah, the Aces are full-on into training for that. Did you want to cover any other aspects, Neil, in particular?
No, I think that has whet the appetite suitably.
Yeah.
People will be eagerly awaiting the next pod.
They will be positively gagging for an entire fortnight, I'm sure. That is us for another fortnight, and I promise we will be back in a fortnight this time. It is not one of my empty, we'll be back soon. But till that time, thanks for listening. We'll catch you then.